We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, August 27 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ready to roll? Trust me, a unique edition of B2BS kicking off on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D, for the next 2 hours and 35 minutes, we got you. Bringing you home, educating you, giving predictions from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. If you're listening today, good decision. A most unique first hour coming and coming quickly. Clint said, Ben, it's time to give book it predictions. I agree with him. Clint said, Ben, it's time for Saints, LSU, and UL season predictions. I agree with that as well. Bottom line, a day before Cousin Dino joins us to begin spreadheads for the 2019 football season, it's time to get rich. Also time for me to put my neck out on the line. So we're going to begin with my book it predictions for this 2019 football season. Four strong on the college side, and then four on the NFL side. Let's get to it. Let's have some fun on a Tuesday. CD, book it prediction number one. Book it. I like that sounder. It's been a little while. Jennings native and Clemson running back Travis Etienne will win the 2019 Heisman Trophy. I said it, and you can book it. He's going off as a 20-1 favorite in Biloxi. How do I know that? I did book it this past weekend. I had a foot soldier on the ground, sent him out to Biloxi, Venmo'd him. I'll take that all day long. You knew we were going to start local with book it today. Give me Travis Etienne over his teammate Trevor Lawrence, over Tua Tagovailoa. Give me the best running back in the country to win an award that lately has been earmarked for the best QB. He'll end the Oklahoma stranglehold, and he brings the Heisman to Jennings, Louisiana. Book it. Not bad. How about number two? Two SEC teams make the playoff again. Georgia and Bama did it two seasons ago. I think we get a repeat. And a reminder that getting to Atlanta is important. It's not everything. More on this later in our 4 o'clock hour. But I like two SEC teams to occupy the final four spots come late December and then into January. And you better believe that you can book it. Let's get to number three. Oregon beats Auburn in the opener this weekend. The combination of Oregon getting back toward the top of the college football world. Washington, Chris Peterson's team, went to the playoffs a few years back. Utah, maybe a revamped UCLA squad under Chip Kelly. The Pac-12 is going to gain some more respect this year, but ultimately, especially with those two SEC teams at the Final Four table, there won't be a seat at the college football table for the Pac-12. CD, remind them what they can do, book it, and then I'll get to the fourth. And I try to always relate one of these to the local in-state team. And so with that in mind, you can book it. Ja'Marr Chase will lead LSU in receiving yards and receiving touchdowns for his efforts. The Rummel Raider, the NOLA native, will become a second team all-SEC performer. And let me remind you that it's not a good league for receivers with Jerry Jeudy at the top. It is a great league between Jeudy, Jalen Waddle. Look, that's just Bama. This is an incredible year for wide receivers in the conference down south. And I'm going to tell you that LSU's got one of the best among them. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's not Justin Jefferson. It's going to be a huge year for Ja'Marr Chase. I've got him leading the Tigers yards and touchdowns through the air. I'll take a brief breath. And we'll take it to the NFL side now. number one NFL book it prediction. Pat Mahomes throws less than 40 touchdowns this year. CD, remind him, book it, and they can do that. He threw 50 last year. I've got him closer to 37 or 38 this year. There has to be regression there. There has to be, right? They could still be a very good team. I think they will be. I don't like him as one of the league's three best. I don't have him as a team that's definitely getting into the AFC title game. But I do think that Pat Mahomes takes a step back, albeit another winning season for Andy Reid and the Chiefs. Certainly they get to the playoffs, but I think he throws maybe two-thirds, three-quarters of his outlandish touchdown total from last year in what was an MVP season. So for me, give me Mahomes at less than 40 touchdowns. Book it. All right, let's go to number two. The Chicago Bears finished as the number one seed in the NFC, and I'll double down. Running back David Montgomery will be your rookie of the year. A kid that had to do it at a not-so-easy place to play at the collegiate level steps into shoes that Jordan Howard has last year. If you haven't drafted him on your fantasy teams, probably a mistake on your part. I intend to do so tomorrow night at Twin Peaks on Johnston. I love David Montgomery's chances on a team that is basically just, you know, filled to the top with water and then pressed like the Keurig button. It's instant made. I think Trubisky continues to take steps forward. Underrated receiving core. One of the best two defenses in the league. I like Chicago this year a good bit. And I'm going to say the Bears finish as the number one team in the NFC. All right, Clint, as I switch from the NFC to AFC, one more time because I guess I like hearing my voice. Book it that the Jacksonville Jaguars win the AFC South and make it to the AFC title game, at least matching what they did 2 years ago. And yes, this news with Andrew Luck, I think, informs my pick a little bit here. You know I liked them, but I think that they win that division, get to the Final Four, and that means at least a moderate, if not severe, bounce-back year for Leonard Fournette and all of Booga Nation. All right, one more time, roll me in as I get to my Saints prediction. Book it. Book it that Marcus Davenport and Trey Hendrickson together combined for 13 sacks. A lot of people focused in on what the second-year player out of Texas San Antonio is going to do. And I do like Davenport's future. But a lot of people also who have been covering this team closely believe that Trey Hendrickson, arguably, has been the most valuable defensive player through this month of August. Does that always translate? Not necessarily. But with Sheldon Rankins coming back sooner than later, with Malcolm Brown looking good on the interior, with some more help inside, and obviously you play opposite of an all-pro in Cam Jordan, I think that other defensive end spot, the one that used to be Davenport and Okafor, now it's Davenport and Hendrickson, combined, I think they get you to 13 sacks. So you're not reliant on just what Davenport can do. But I think combined, they showcase a whole lot of strength. CD, that's a lot, brother. That's eight predictions. You could book all of them in the opening segment. Anything that you really believe is zanier than the rest when you look them up and down?
You know what I mean? Like, the one that's the zaniest of them all, I think, is the fact that you brought it up with Travis Etienne, the first one right out of the gate. When you threw this at me in the rundown, just bringing this up, I was like, wait a minute, you have Travis Etienne winning the Heisman. This is going out on a limb because of what you brought up. It's the trend that has been the quarterback for quite some time, and there's a lot of different choices at quarterback that could wind up probably being the Heisman Trophy candidate. I'd probably wind up, again, I'm just a person who likes to go with favorites, and I feel like, you know, you look at Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa, both those guys have a very, very strong case. It's all about what they do throughout the season, of course, but it just feels like Travis Etienne isn't going to get it done.
Can those QBs dilute the water and leave some room for my guy Travis Etienne? Time will tell. It's going to be a busy first hour and a different one than maybe you're used to. No guess between now and 5 o'clock. Here's the good news. At 5:05, Shea Dixon joins us. We're going to flip the script after a little recruiting talk as well. Buckle up. Busy on a Tuesday. Clint and I predicting the Saints' regular season record when we return. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, putting it on the line on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
About that, as an opening segment, we debut on a Tuesday with Book It Predictions, four-piece for college football in the NFL. Ben Love alongside Clint Domang. And yeah, we've got some Saints season predictions for you now. In fact, we put it out there for you to answer as well on social media. Go to 103.7 The Game, Facebook or Twitter. Give your reaction. What will the Saints record be in this regular season? Ditto for LSU. Ditto for the Raging Cajuns. And over the next 42 minutes, Clint and I are going to give you, not necessarily line by line, don't have enough time for that. We want to give you our predictions. We're going to start here with the Saints. CD, I'm going big picture, and then I'll start to break it down like a fraction for you. I'm going 11-5 this year for the Saints. I was very, very bullish on this team last preseason. I gave you 12-4. I caught some stares for that. Once I got outside of the 237 Roof Studios, people said, boy, that's a lot of wins. My bad, I was wrong. They won 13 games last year. I think they take a slight, ever so slight step back toward Earth this year. I've got them at 11-5. I told you in the opening segment, I think the Bears are the number one seed in the NFC. I believe the Saints will end up being in wild card weekend playing a home game, CD. So give me the Saints at 11-5. I'll break it down further, but I want to see if we agree or disagree here.
Oh, we disagree a little bit here. I think they get one extra win. The thing of it is, I think the games you do lose, you lose two of them to NFC South opponents, in my mind. It's going to be 12-4, but that early part of the schedule is going to where you have a lot of landmines. Of course, you got the Texans, which you never know where that's going to go, Rams, Seahawks, and the Cowboys. Those first four games are going to determine a lot, and of course, you got the Jags a little bit down the line, but it's tough.
So you've got 12-4.
Yeah.
I've got 11-5. The Saints have been awful in the first two games of the last two regular seasons.
Yep.
And yet I had them beating the Houston Texans. Hard to imagine the Saints losing a Monday night football game in the dome. I have them winning at the Rams as well. I know they say in the NFL it's not as much about revenge and rivalries. I think they've got a little something for the Rams on September the 15th. I do have them losing the next week at Seattle. Seahawks had the best run game in the league a year ago. It'll be the second straight week out on the West Coast. That's a really good defense, a mobile quarterback. And so for what it's worth, I got them at 5-3 through eight games, losses at the Seahawks, home to the Bucks, and then at the Bears. That game on Sunday, October the 20th, is the second of two straight away games. So I've got them losing three out of the first eight and then two of the final eight at the Falcons on Thanksgiving, at the Tennessee Titans Sunday, December the 22nd. So all told, I'm at 11-5. I do think that puts them in a wild card game hosting, but I'm not saying this team can and won't go to the Super Bowl. So don't hear me wrong. I just don't know that they're going to be that dynamo through the first 10 or 12 games this year that they were last year. And frankly, I don't care if they are or they're not, as long as they're healthy and they're right by the time they come down the stretch. And one other thing that may behoove them this year, their last two games are on the road. If they're still playing for not just their playoff lives, but especially seeding and home games and maybe a bye week, if those things still matter, at Tennessee, December 22nd, at Carolina, December 29, you'll get the full complement. You'll get Breeze. You'll get everybody. I'm not saying that they got rusty after that Week 17 Panthers game and then, you know, a bye game after that. I just wouldn't mind seeing this team a well-oiled machine, especially if they're healthy going into the playoffs. So those are some of, I guess, the devils in the details, if you will, of how I get them to 11-5.
And they'll be making a lot of hay. You're talking about those last three games. Can't forget about the fourth-to-last game with the San Francisco 49ers, the Colts, the Titans, and the Panthers. That's definitely four very winnable games at the tail end of the season to where if the Saints do have to worry about their postseason lives, those four games, it's a little bit of a cushion.
Not bad, right?
Not at all.
It definitely starts a little bit more difficult. And then the one thing I will say that's different from the last few years, I mentioned that they've started pretty darn slow. they start to heat up, games 3, 4, and then typically there's been that bye week. Now, I know a few years back it was centered around the trip to London, right? This year the bye week is smack dab in the middle of the schedule. They're off Sunday, November the 3rd. That means that they've got 8 games, a bye week, and 8 games. And trust me, in a little bit, when we get to LSU and then UL, their seasons are structured very differently. The Cajuns and the Tigers, they are. We're at the 2 bye weeks this year. It's just kind of exact harmony for LSU, and it's a little more chaotic for the Cajuns. And I'll explain that here momentarily. But I remember a few seasons ago, you were as hyped up as you could be on the Saints.
Yep.
I think you legitimately had them at 13 wins like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And they went 7-9. And so you got a little bit timid last year. Don't remember the exact number, but I want to say you were maybe a 9-7 guy.
I think it might have been 9-7, 8-8, somewhere along those lines. Mind you, I think we definitely can agree this year we're not like this guy a couple years ago.
Well, we're going 10-6. It's happening.
Run that back again.
The Saints are terrible. We're going 10-6. It's happening.
Yeah, see, the first time you cut off the funniest part about it. They're terrible.
They're going 10-6.
They're going 10-6. you know what's just – you live long enough and things – kind of change meaning and form on you there. I think a lot of people would believe the Saints had a terrible year this year if they go 10-6.
Yes. But
you're not a lock to make the playoffs if you go 10-6. But I do think in the NFC South, it's going to be the Saints, the Falcons, and everybody else this year. Maybe the Bucs take a step forward if Jameis is healthy and has his head screwed on right all year long. Maybe. I'm not sure if the Carolina Panthers are going to be knocking on the door of the playoffs this year. You know, I was high on them last year. Don't know about this year. Got to figure out what Cam Newton and company have, especially after he got dinged up in preseason week 3. But the Saints, I have them at 11-5. Clint's got them at 12-4. Again, feed us your predictions on social media. Go to 1037 The Game on Facebook and on Twitter. We'll give you shout-outs on the show. So now that we've got a little bit extra time carved out here, what do you make of my other NFC prediction that I made in the first segment? The Bears win, not win the NFC. They could, but I think they're going to have home field advantage as the number one seed.
I think that's definitely a bold prediction, to say the least. And I think a lot of it has to do with your pick. It's got a lot to do with the fact that this team, this defense, is an absolute stud. I feel like we're going to wind up seeing that later on this year when the Saints and Bears do play each other. But I think you're also betting on Trubisky improving by leaps and bounds in 2019.
I would say that he did from year 1 to year 2. I feel okay about what the slender man can do from year 2 to year 3. I've also never heard anything but one human being or one animal referred to as a stud. I think you just gave a collective team the label of stud this year. That's new on me.
But like I said, it's a whole group.
But Clint will make up a new word that has something to do with a new group of people.
Exactly. It's always a prediction for us.
So I'll tell you this. There were some difficult games to predict on the schedule this year because there are difficult stretches. And one of them, as I look at it, I'm predicting a Saints loss at the Falcons on Thanksgiving Thursday. You got to hate playing a short week on the road. And that's exactly what the Saints have. They play Sunday, November 24, home against the Panthers. And then they turn around 5 days later. They're going to play at the Falcons. I just don't like some of these circumstances. I know that the Saints are going to stay out on the West Coast, for example, between weeks 2 and week 3, between the Rams and the Seahawks. But I've got them losing the back end of that. That's just a little unusual with the travel, with your routine. They're on the road 2 straight games in October at Jacksonville, then at Chicago. I've got them losing the back end of that. So some of what I'm predicting this year takes into account the oddities of the schedule, how often they'll be traveling consecutively. Short-term rest. Now, the Saints don't have that hellacious run in late November, early December like they did a year ago, right? With, like, the Thursday. What was it last year? I think it was 2 Thursday nights in a row.
Yeah, and then a Sunday.
I think they played, like, 3 games in 16 days.
Yeah, you have about 2 Thursday night games in a row. It was the Thanksgiving game and then the week after that. And then you had the not the following Sunday, but the Sunday after.
So, again, it's a little more forgiving this time around. And I'm not predicting a lack of playoff success, but I do think the Saints win 2 fewer games in the regular season than they did last year. If they're healthy, if their form is right, it won't matter one iota. All right, half hour into the show today. The next half hour, we'll keep the predictions flowing. I'm going LSU on the other side of this break. I think you'll like this. And I don't live to appease the masses. It's just how I feel. The schedule breaks out the right way. The toughest games, in a lot of ways, come after the bye weeks. I think big things are in store for Ed Orgeron and LSU's football team in 2019. I'll tell you all about it when we return. Then Billy Napier and the Cajuns. It'll be their turn in about 18 minutes. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back in. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Already, I've booked it. I've given you a Saint season prediction. Clint doubled down with his. I've got Who Dat Nation at 11-5. Clint says 12-4. In a moment, we're going to go in on the LSU season records. But let's share everything we've got so far from social media. Again, we're asking for Saints, LSU, and Cajuns regular season predictions. And at Cajun Saint 88 has LSU at 9-3, the Cajuns at 8-4, and the Saints at 14-2. Jonathan F. on Twitter, LSU's 11-1. The Cajuns are 6-6, and the Saints are 12-4. We've got some rhyme and reason for Jess B. on Twitter. 10-2 for LSU, added a lot of talent. Joe Burrow's more experience in the offense. And he says 14-2 for the Saints. Bold prediction, but we play some cupcake divisions this year. Losses to the Bears and to the Falcons. Finally, CD, we'll take our lone submission on Facebook. Chris W. says LSU is 10-2. The Cajuns are 5-7. The Saints are 12-4. A lot of optimism baked into everything so far, right?
Exactly, and that's what you kind of expect as we get closer and closer towards the start of the 2019 season. I think that's where we need to be.
All right, I'm going to let you go first for LSU. It's just a common courtesy thing. Plus, I kind of want to sit back and spy what you got cooking a little bit there. Give me an LSU season prediction this year.
And I think Jess kind of stole the thunder there with 10-2. That's where I'm going, and it's largely because of the fact that you've got some really tough swing games. Of course, that Alabama game just feels like that lone loss on that schedule. But outside that, you got Texas. You've got maybe a Mississippi State game, because that series as of late is going to the home team. That could wind up changing this year. Obviously, the Texas A&M game at the end of the year is going to be heated. And I think, obviously, even though Florida wound up kind of laying an egg to start the season, they could wind up turning things around later on, and that will always be a tough game. So I feel like there's a lot of swing games and traps that LSU could wind up getting into. That's why I'm going 10-2 for the most part, just because of the schedule.
You have LSU at 10-2. That would be a one-game improvement over the 2018 regular season and almost certainly a second straight appearance in a New Year's Day bowl, a New Year's Six bowl.
Exactly, and I think you probably wind up going maybe back to the Fiesta Bowl. As long as you stay the hell away from the Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl, I'm more than okay with it.
Let me set the table for you, and then I'll give my prediction. Right. Schedules are important. It's not everything, right? The health of your team, the development of your studs, and especially your unheralded rookies and first-timers to the starting lineup, all those things are probably more important, but the schedule matters a lot. LSU's is almost ideal. They don't open with the juggernaut. They get a good team in week two, but a beatable opponent, in my opinion. And they've got four games, then a bye week. Four games, then a bye week. Then four games. It's a double bye week year, and they're set up perfectly congruent. The rest, you can't beat it for this year's team. They'll have no excuses in that department. Plus, let me add this. And if you don't believe in some form of sports superstition, I can't help you. Because in 2003, LSU went to New Orleans and won a national championship. In 2007, ditto. In 2011, they went back to New Orleans. For my money, that was the best of those three teams. It just didn't end well against arguably Nick Saban's best ever Alabama team. In 2015, the national title wasn't played in New Orleans, but don't tell me that wasn't a special LSU team that was at least in the making. They were 8-0 heading into the bye week, going to Tuscaloosa. And that is where Derrick Henry stole Leonard Fournette's Heisman in that game, and the end of the season wasn't exactly pretty. Les Miles, as we know, can early the next regular season. My point is this. Every 4 years, there's just kind of something going on. And this year, LSU's got another schedule that I think lays out the right way. Clint, you've got Florida, Auburn, Texas A&M, Arkansas, all at home. Bama on the road ain't a bad thing, and I've been beating that into your brain. And then there's the fact that the national championship game again this year is going to be played in the Big Easy. So I say all that to say this, 11-1. The lone loss comes to Bama. It'll be a matchup of the number two versus number three teams in the country. Clemson will be ahead of them at number one. So you got a number two versus number three matchup. Even at 11-1, I've got LSU making the college football playoff this year. After Bama beats Georgia in Atlanta in a matchup of two top five teams, Georgia gets kicked out of that. And the next team in line, beating out a Pac-12 team, beating out a Big 12 team potentially, is going to be LSU. And so earlier in the show I told you there would be two SEC teams in the Final Four. I think Bama's one of them. I think LSU is one of them. I've got the Tigers going 11-1, and as I mentioned earlier, getting to Atlanta is paramount, but it's not the only thing, and it's not everything. This time, I think a very good LSU team gets to experience how the other half, namely the ones that live in Bama, have lived twice in this decade, not going to their own title game in the conference and still getting in. I think LSU goes 11-1 with a late-season scare at home against A&M. Yeah, I think that's a close one. But I think LSU keeps its college football playoff hopes alive by beating the Aggies at home on November the 30th. And I think they have to sweat it out as Bama beats Georgia in Atlanta. And I got LSU as the fourth team in to the college football playoff with an 11-1 record. All right, that's enough for me. I'll let you react to it. Then we got to hit our final break of the hour. Frank, I just laid it out. What do you make of it?
Well, Ben, you pretty much nailed it, what I was thinking on LSU. As far as for the Saints, I think they're going to get tripped up early, which is why I'm giving 11-5. Normally I go 10-6, but this year I'm going 11-5. Continuity is the one thing that coming out of the gate is going to be the struggle for them, because there's a lot of moving parts that need to, you know, work with each other on the offense. I'm not too much worried about the defense this year. I think they're set on defense, but the offense is moving parts that need to gel together.
There we go. Frank, you know, I appreciate it.
Too easy, man.
It's easy money. That was Frank aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Let me add this one more log on the fire for LSU, Clint, and then we'll take that final break of the hour. LSU plays five ranked teams, preseason ranked teams. Things will change, as you mentioned. Mississippi State could be into that grouping by the time they play them. But I don't think you're going to see Ole Miss or Arkansas play their way there. I know that Vandy's not. Here's my point. When I tell you that the schedule lines up right and the stars seem to be aligning, in my opinion, LSU plays five ranked teams. One of them is Texas. That means only four of the eight SEC opponents this year are preseason ranked. I know that things can change. This is not a juggernaut schedule as things go in the SEC West. Clemson, let me back that up a bit. A&M plays Clemson in the non-conference and Georgia for the cross-division rotator this year. LSU's got Texas and Vandy in comparison to that. I think we'd all take that, you know, eight times a week, right? No question about it. So I've given the Saints at 11-5, Clint said 12-4. I've given LSU at 11-1 and a college football playoff team. That's my prediction today. Clint says 10-2. Where are we going with the Raging Cajuns? I'll tell you on the other side of this break. Quick reminder, you just heard me say before this segment, Thursday, Bumper to Bumper Sports will be live at the Taproom River Ranch. I'm going to book it from there and hustle over to Cajun Field. We are going to have the Carencro Bro Bridge Jamboree. 6:45, our pregame show, kickoff from Cajun Field at the Kiwanis Jamboree, scheduled for about 7:15 Awfully excited for that. So you can hear Karen Crow versus Bro Bridge, myself alongside Blaine Viator. We'll have some fun with that Thursday early evening here on Acadiana Sports Station. We'll be right back in predicting Billy Napier in the Cajun season when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports Live and Predicted Dangs on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
46 minutes after 4 o'clock, having a lot of fun with our predictions so far today. Clint and I will get right back on that wagon talking Cajuns momentarily, but we got a call. Let's take one quickly. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, Jody, thank you for waiting through the break. The floor is yours.
I'm going with the Little League, Louisiana Little.
Speaking of getting back on the wagon, I'm not sure what happened there. Clint, do we still have Jody?
Give me one second.
I think he was about to predict the team from River Ridge, the Little League World Series champs, to go like 12-0 this year in the SEC. I'm not sure. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's what that was about to be. But we'll find out. We'll take it one more time. Jody, can you hear us, bud?
Yes, sir. I sure can. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to go with the Little League team of winning. Saints lose 4. Tigers lose 1.
Yeah, we can't keep doing this. Sorry. Can't do it. It's kind of like yesterday. Tank Lotief came on the show. He was dynamite on speakerphone while saying he's driving around in Vermilion Parish. I said, well, this will be good. And it was for about half a second, and then the call dropped desperately. So, Jody, hit us up on Facebook, Twitter. Do what you got to do. Can't have that static on the program. What we can do, what we will do, is pick the Raging Cajuns regular season. Why you have the mic positioned to your face, I have no idea, Clint, because I'm going first. 8-4. One step forward from last year in the win-loss column. And again, I think they finish with a bit of a flurry. And again, I think it's a bit of an ugly start. This one I actually will take on just about a month-by-month basis. But I told you early in the hour, there's a perfectly equal schedule in terms of rest. And I love the way it lays out for LSU. 4 games bye week. For the Cajuns, 5 games bye week, 2 games bye week. 5 games. Now, what's interesting is that moat of bye weeks, right in between them, the castle, if you will, probably the toughest part of the schedule. Wednesday, October the 9th, versus App State, who last year the Cajuns played on the road in the first ever Sunbelt Conference title game. And then 8 days later, Thursday, October 17th, at Arkansas State. So here's what I'll tell you, Clint. I believe the Cajuns go 2-3 in the month of September. And I will go line items here, but I'll go quickly. A loss to Mississippi State, but I think they cover the spread. They beat Liberty at home. They beat Texas Southern at home. And then I think they lose the next two. I think they lose at Ohio. And before I get tomatoes thrown at me here, inside the 237 Roof Studios, Ohio has won 9 games each of the last 2 years. They throttled San Diego State 27-0 in last year's bowl game. They throttled UAB in their bowl game following the 2017 season. This is a good Ohio team, and the Cajuns get them on the road. I think that's a loss, September 21, and I think they lose at Georgia Southern on September 28. So I've got them at 2-3 going into the first bye week. Then I think they get the landmark win of the Billy Napier era to date. I think they beat App State Wednesday, October 9 on the deuce. I think they carry over that confidence, and they win on the road at a near impossible place for them to win recently, Arkansas State. I also would note, without an ounce of joy in me, I'm being dead serious about this, that there's just uncertainty right now. I don't know how Arkansas State's going to perform this year. They underperformed last year. This year, Blake Anderson, the head coach, taking a leave of absence. His wife has recently passed away. So again, at this juncture, I'm going to tell you that the Cajuns win those 2 games back-to-back, and they enter their second bye week at 4-3. Suddenly, they're being discussed as maybe the Sun Belt Conference favorite. I'll take them beating Texas State out of the gate November 2nd. I think they win at Coastal, despite that being a short rest Saturday to Thursday. Clint, I have them losing at South Al and then finishing out the season strong, beating Troy, beating ULM, both of those games at Cajun Field. So let me put a bow on it, then I'll get your predictions. I've got them at 8-4 overall, 6-2 in Sunbelt play. I think they go undefeated at home this year. And I think they get back into the Sunbelt Conference title game. And I'll also say that they're back at App State for that game. I think the Cajuns beating App State will be the lone conference blemish on the Mountaineers' schedule. So that's where I'm at this year, brother. 8-4, 6-2 in the league, still winning the West, still traveling to Boone, North Carolina.
And they're definitely traveling back to Boone, North Carolina in my book as well, but I'm going a little bit differently here. I'm going out on a limb, though, saying they go 9-3 because I understand where you're coming from with Ohio, but from what I've heard, they've lost a lot of talent. So I think this is going to wind up being an opportunity for the Cajuns to get things done and pull off a mild upset. Let's just put it that way. I agree with you. They're a damn good team. They're a damn good program, but I feel like they can wind up pulling off the surprise. And, of course, the App State game, I think they wind up losing. Arkansas State, I agree with you. I think they finally buck the trend that the Cajuns and Arkansas State have had where the home team has won that ball game. I'm going 9-3 here, and it definitely doesn't feel like I'm going out on too much of a limb in my mind.
So your losses are who? Mississippi State.
Yep.
App State.
And Troy.
And Troy. So you think they lose at home to Troy. And in the month of November, I've got them losing on the road the week prior at South Al. Okay.
Troy just seems like it's way – App State still feels like that's the gold standard.
No question.
And I feel like it's going to be tough for them to kind of get over that hump against them, at least this year. I think next year, now that you kind of have everybody – starting to really buy in, you get your own ingredients in there, I think they could really shock the system next year.
Clint, the Cajuns play their final game in September. Five straight dates. They technically go August 31 through September 28.
All right.
Then they're off on October the 5th. Then they've got App State on October the 9th. I think with four extra days to prepare for this game, the fact that it's at home, I like their chances. They went on the road and played competitively twice in Boone last year. This time around, they're going to get them at home on a Wednesday night. The benefit of that bye week, I think that becomes the landmark win of the Billy Napier era. I think at 9-3, that's a bit strong. That's a bit strong. They go 9-3 this year. They might need to think about more money for Billy Napier. And people will think that's premature 2 years in. If they go 9-3 this year, you're going to have to do some things to keep that entire staff around. I know at 8-4, I don't have it all that much differently. But if they go 9-3 with an opportunity to win a 10th in the bowl game, I mean, that'll be a school record, no?
Oh, no, I think 9-3 is just the fact you have that in a regular season that's a record.
That part would be 10 yes. total wins would be as well.
10 total wins would be absolutely huge. But I think it's all about getting things done and winning the Sun Belt Conference Championship because I feel like you just keep running into that wall that is App State. If you can wind up doing that on the first early December, I think that's absolutely huge for this program. If you want to get that landmark and get back to the New Orleans Bowl and start building things up, I think you need to wind up having at least one of those like significant wins for the talk of Billy Napier to probably wind up being on the way out.
And I think it's home versus App State. You think it's on the road versus Arkansas State. I think they win both of those games.
And
sandwiched together in the month of October. I mean, it's after a bye week and then preceding a bye week. So what we know is last year they finished the season strong. I think both of us are predicting that they're going to do some semblance of that again this year. So quickly, let's run down. We'll go back to the leaderboard and see where we're at, Clint. You and I spent the entire hour. First, I gave it book it predictions, college football, then the pros. Then we went in on the Saints. I'm at 11-5. The Saints are playing in a wild card round game, but they're hosting it. For the Saints, you are?
12-4. I'd probably wind up saying they get a bye week there.
If they're 12-4, I think you might be right about that.
Let's go.
Let's go to LSU. I've got the Tigers at 11-1, lone loss at Bama, and they still find a way as the fourth team into the college football playoff after Bama beats Georgia in the SEC title game. LSU will be one of those teams that's right there next in line after Georgia slips out. I think LSU seeps in and beat out the Pac-12, and probably I would think the other conference that's outside looking in is the Big 12. So give me 11-1.
I got 10-2. I think it's definitely going to wind up being up to what happens with a lot of those landmine games. Talk about Texas, Texas A&M. You've got the Florida game still going to wind up having some tough matchups in there.
And finally, to recap what we just did, the Raging Cajuns, I'm at 8-4 overall, 6-2 in Sunbelt Conference play. Wednesday, October 9, landmark win early in the Billy Napier era. They beat App State. I think they'll play them for the fourth time in 2 years in early December, but it'll be on the road.
I got them going 9-3. I'm going on a little bit of a limb with this one.
I like it. So there we are. It's on wax. Here we go in the 27th day, the 8th month of the 19th year of the second millennium. AD, if I'm going full Jordy Holtberg show here, to introduce when we're putting it on wax, damn it. But we did it. Let's cap off this hour with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Level. And certainly, for LSU and UL, this would not only be two more wins for the Tigers in the regular season than last year, one more for the Cajuns than last fall. It would be taking things to another level. Cajuns win some of those games I just mentioned. Billy Napier really is going to start to take off across the country, not just kind of parochially. And when it comes to LSU, certainly getting back in that college football playoff conversation, that would be a new level for Ed Orgeron as well. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming back. All right, enough of me and Clint. Let's bring in Shea Dixon to the party. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
Interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crowe Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running after a turbocharged hour number one. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D, ready to launch into hour two of three. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on 103.7 The Game. Between now and 6:35, going to continue to max it out. We got Shea Dixon, Go247, joining us momentarily. A little Cruton, and then mostly we'll dive into week one of the LSU football season. But Clint, that was maybe our most unique hour of radio in some 4.5 years. I mean, book it prediction, Saints, LSU, UL. I kind of like putting it on the line, all in 1 hour. Let's just get it out there.
I think we need to do this officially, just every college before every college football season on the Tuesday before, just one straight hour of predictions. I feel like that's how you do things.
And I've gotten the same text in two different varieties in our hour break there. Thanks for the Walton and Johnson laugh into the radio.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for that. The same exact text, two different varieties. Why would you do that to my LSU Tigers? Sorry, I'm not sorry. That's how I feel. I've got them at 11-1 this year. I think they're going to be that good. Last year, I told you I thought they were going 8-4. I'm just telling you, I think they're that good with that type of potential and the right type of schedule laid out in front of them this year. Same guy that in, let's see here, early to mid-July of 2011, while working as the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, I sent out a proof to our printer that had Tyrann Mathieu on the cover. And it said, Domeward Bound, with a huge bleeping picture of the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. I will not be held responsible for what happened when the year and the calendar changed from 2011 to 2012. But it worked out pretty well. I had a feeling in 2011. I'm not telling you they're going to win it all this year, but I think they go 11-1 and sneak into the college football playoffs. So if you missed any and all of our predictions, myself and Clint, from hour number one, you can go catch up with us on demand at 1037thegame.com. You can also go to the free mobile app and catch it on demand there. Quickly to the news of the day, and then we bring on Shea. Sheldon Rankin's off the PUP list. He returns to practice. A return date in-game is still, as of yet, unknown. As for LSU in the secondary, Kelvin Joseph has officially now landed with the Kentucky Wildcats. The second-year cornerback out of Scotlandville Magnet has been followed into the transfer portal, we learned yesterday, by Manny Netherly from the state of Texas. Now, what's interesting? How much can we read into this? I don't know. But after announcing for Kentucky as his transfer destination, Kelvin Joseph tweeted at Manny Netherly and said, "When are you going to tell him?" basically. And Netherly said, "Shut up, say less." Could that be an indicator that two of LSU's top four or five on the CB depth chart just 3 weeks ago might both be Kentucky Wildcats? Certainly something to follow. All right, you follow this program, you know we bring you the goods every single Tuesday. Today is no different. Let me knock on the door and see if I can find Shea for you.
Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out.
It's time for Shea Dixon of Go 247.
We brought him out, and we had to bust him out because it's a game week edition of Flip the Script here momentarily, but our conversation's with Shea D. And so we're happy to have you on a Tuesday. I mentioned that it's a game week. How goes it, Shea?
Oh, it's going beautifully. I'm staring at Tiger Stadium as we speak. Right now, it's just a billion kids out here, right? Our school started this week, so traffic is nuts. The parking lots are nuts, but by Saturday, at least all the parking lots will be filled with people drinking beer and cold beverages and tailgating and doing more than just clogging up traffic.
Yeah, college football would be great if it weren't for all the college and the students and kids that are going
on.
I
always say that. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And I'm right there with you. The Saints may have that whole thing figured out without the kids. But let's get to the recruiting questions first, brother, and we'll get back to the kids now. There have been a run of crystal ball predictions for Zach Evans to Georgia. Number one running back in the country, plenty of LSU connections. Certainly the Tigers have been involved, but what can you tell us about this latest wrinkle?
Yeah, that's sort of been the storyline across the past couple of weeks, is that LSU kind of shot for the stars here after they signed John Emery, the number one running back last year, Ty Davis Price, the number six running back, and they finished with arguably the best class in the country. So they turn around and say, well, beyond Leonard Fournette, we don't have a senior. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be back for another year after this one. You've got Chris Curry on roster. They picked out 2 5-stars that they really liked in Kendall Milton and Zach Evans. And Kendall Milton came on an official visit. He seemed interested, and he committed to Georgia. So everyone, okay, said, perfect, moving on. Let's focus on Zach Evans. Well, now Zach Evans might be going to Georgia. And I know a lot of people say, what's the deal with that? Who wants to be in a running back room with other, you know, 5-star running backs? We saw LSU do it last cycle. We've seen Georgia do it numerous times, taking multiple or back-to-back years of top running backs. Both those schools do it well. So it won't shock me if he winds up at Georgia, but let me press pause here for a second and say that a lot of the smoke around the Zach Evans recruitment has not come from Zach Evans. It's come from different colleges, people around Texas, and everyone at the North Shore seems to maintain that, look, he's open to this final group of suitors, which includes LSU. LSU's going to get him on an official visit in October for the Auburn game. So a guy, as you said, lots of connections. North Shore to LSU is a pipeline that they've had going for a long time, not just players on the field, but guys who graduated from there and went on to coach, or graduated from LSU, went on to coach at North Shore. So it works both ways. Houston is a big LSU city. I see LSU hanging around this one longer than this sort of wave of crystal balls might predict. And I'll just kind of put my neck out there and say that I don't think this one is done. Evans kind of goes to the beat of his own drum. That could mean taking it all the way to signing day, which is what he's adamantly said many times. So we'll see. A lot of people have their ears perked up right now. Could he do something soon? But regardless, I think LSU's sort of in this one for the long haul.
Shea, let's put your neck right back onto the chopping block. In this class of 2020, I mean, just about everybody who follows LSU recruiting clamoring for offensive tackles. Anything you could tell them, any manna that you can pour from the heavens?
Sure. Well, right now it's offensive line is a need at OT because they have one guy committed, Marlon Martinez, and he's more of an interior prospect. He can play it all in high school, but in college you would want him to be playing on the inside. And they need to find some guys with length, with athleticism, more guys in the Sadiq Charles, Cam Wire, Dare Rosenthal type of molds, and even Austin Deculus coming out of high school. I know he got knocked last year, but that was year one for him. I think he's got some upside. So they need to find more of those types. They continue to be in contact with Marcus Dumervil, who's Marlon Martinez's teammate, one of the top uncommitted tackles in the country. But I will say this, and I can give you more names. Marcus Henderson in Memphis. Damian George, Jack Evans' teammate at the North Shore, is committed to Bama right now. A number of kids are out there that they're keeping the lines of communication open with, trying to get in on visits. But so often, and people will say, why do so many of these NFL draft kids that are offensive tackles wind up at not the big schools, not the marquee schools? They weren't heavily recruited. And it's because teams like LSU and many others so often, Ben, are done with evals by the time this happens. LSU's at 23 commits, and kids haven't even started their senior years. And so often these offensive tackles who end up being the really good ones develop late. They develop as seniors. They end up switching positions and playing tackle as a senior. And that's where you see the upside. So I'm willing to bet that we see LSU make a move on someone this cycle that we're not talking about, that might be out there in three-star territory and not committed anywhere, committed to a smaller program that you look and all of a sudden say, whoa, this guy is the real deal. He's made big strides, and that's often where these steals come from. So for once, and often they're sort of ahead of the game, I think that it might not be the worst thing that they don't have an offensive tackle committed yet, because I think that can open some doors for them to really make a nice play on some senior evals.
He is Shea Dixon, go247.com, and I think for the first time in Tuesday history, buddy, of you and I doing this, we're going to transition into Flip the Script without the benefit of a commercial break. I know how darn busy you are, so we'll skip the coach show. We'll get right into your questions. It's your show for the next series of minutes. Hit me with what you got, bud.
Well, it's Georgia Southern. It's week one, and it's Georgia Southern week. So we've got to dive into LSU football a little bit. And I'll make it simple. We always like the sort of I give it to you short, you give it to me straight type of stuff. So a few categories here, and let's start with this one. And you can pick anyone on the team and your definition of it to be determined. Who has a breakout game? You know, don't give me Joe Burrow. Don't give me any of those guys. Who has a breakout game for LSU this weekend where you say, okay, they're going to be able to rely on him this year?
Yesterday, I believe Stephon Sullivan, along with Thaddeus Moss, were named co-starters at tight end. And so I will say that they have a good chance in a game like this of being your co-breakout player. Why? Because if they catch a combined three balls, we're all going to say, holy hell, LSU's throwing to the tight end again. I think that's imminently doable. And the one thing we often forget about when it comes to spreading the field out, we think about the running lanes, the running room for the backs, the opportunities for slot receivers. But when they use these tight ends, especially guys that can go down the field and catch the ball, I think there's an opportunity for them to bring something in. That's more than the past, with all due respect to talents like Foster Moreau and everybody who preceded him. So I'll say that the tight ends catch a minimum of three balls in this game, and that'll be cause for at least some celebration, some semblance of a breakout.
Absolutely. That would be a monster game in the decade of LSU football tight ends. All right, let's keep it on that path, breakout, but I'm going to narrow your search here. You can only pick from the true freshman, and I'll say it with this caveat. They're playing a triple option team, so we don't know how much they're going to throw on Derek Stingley, but he will be starting on punt returns. Ball in your court. What freshman has the biggest game?
I think Stingley's going to impress a lot of people if they allow him with punting. If it's not directional or out of bounds, he may show some people a lot. But I'm going to give you a different guy because, and it's a defender, because it is going to be the option attack. Because if LSU can jump on this team early or even by the middle portion of the third quarter, I think you'll see a lot of playing time late. I'll give you Marcel Brooks, and you and I are both fans of his game, but when it comes to breakdown one-on-one tackles in space, I'll take a guy that could play anywhere from safety to sometimes a rush edge type of linebacker. And so I think Marcel Brooks is a guy that in the second half might give you 4 to 5 plus tackles, and you'll see a glimpse of the future and life after Jacoby Stevens.
I like the pick. I like the pick. I'm with you on Stingley. He'll have a chance to break out even if it's returning punts. Okay, give me this. And this is the age-old debate for every week one of every LSU offseason. How much do they show on offense? And really kind of frame this how you want. Do you unload? Do you say, we need to run our offense versus Georgia Southern Or are you more leaning to the boat of people who are out there listening to it and say, no, Ben, no, Shay, what are you thinking? They play Texas in week two. Don't do anything. Just get out of there with a W.
This one, it needs to be defined because I do believe they're going to show you the structure, the, you know, the kind of the bones of what they plan to do for the rest of the year, but they're not going to give you razzle dazzle, and they won't need a lot in the way of trick plays. So if that makes sense, then you get kind of where I'm heading here. I think you are going to see the true spread. I think you are going to see an idea of what the basic tenets of their offense is, and it's going to look different in a lot of ways than what you've become used to. But are they going to have to roll out the flea flicker, the reverse pass, the annexation of Puerto Rico? Likely not. So I think they keep it fairly vanilla, but even the new vanilla would have been the old Neapolitan. So there's your answer.
I agree with you. I think that they need this one. And we could probably both agree from a general strategic standpoint, this ain't Dan Mullen for it in Miami. I don't expect a fake punt from their own 30 in this game. That's something you tuck away.
No, yeah, you're going to have to let that breathe for at least another week before you head to Austin. And Shay, I look forward to catching up with you before you head to Austin. Have a great opening week. We'll catch up soon.
Sounds great. I enjoyed it. Thanks, Ben.
Shay Dixon, kicking flavor in your ear, Craig Mack style, to begin your 5 o'clock hour on a Tuesday. How's that for the first 75 minutes of the program? Book it predictions. Saints, LSU, UL, and then straight to our man, Shay D. Live in large on a Tuesday and get used to our flow during football season. Mondays, we began it yesterday. Gus Kattengill, Ruffin Rodrigue, James Buers, getting you deep into the Saints, LSU, UL, and then the prep level. Tuesdays at Shay Dixon. Tomorrow, hey, speaking of Craig Mack and kicking flavor in your ear, that's the exact sound we use to bring on Cousin Dino. Spreadheads is back tomorrow at 4:30. Thursdays means Gordy Rush, Blaine Viator. Fridays means Justin Vincent. I'm getting that football season feel to me. Got to kick it to one more break, and then we come right back in. Take your phone calls. React to everything you just heard from Shay and myself, and then we throw a little bit of shade coming up at half past the hour. You're listening to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Right back in, and did that guy just roar at people on the radio?
Yeah, he just roared.
Okay. Occasionally, I dial in during the commercial break. You know, like when they had those, they weren't PSAs, but when they were playing, I guess it was maybe an Alexa skill, when they were playing
country
music. Like literally a 20-second snippet of a country music song.
Yeah.
And you know my feelings on country music.
Oh, so we know.
I noticed it. I didn't like it. I commented on it. That grown man just roared at us there on radio.
That was weird.
Okay. Just making sure I heard it right.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Hopefully this hasn't been weird so far. We are 81 minutes into today's program. We've given all kinds of predictions. We've had on one of our best weekly guests. Okay, I don't want to get him upset. We've had on our best weekly guest in Shay Dixon, go247.com. Now we're going to open it up for you. And we've done it this way intentionally. React to everything we've said. Give your own season predictions. The Saints, LSU, and UL. Between now and the end of this hour, wide open. We got time for you. 706-0111. Call, predict, and maybe you'll be similar to what Clint and I put out there. I gave 11-5 for the Saints. Clint was at 12-4. I gave 11-1 for LSU. Clint was at 10-2. I gave 8-4 for the Cajuns. Clint was at 9-3. Again, your predictions, let it be known throughout Acadiana and beyond whenever you're ready. I did want to get to some of the biggest week one college games, CD. We've spent a lot of time, obviously, on the games involving the Tigers and the Cajuns. Let me give you a bit of the lay of the land. The rest of the college landscape. Consider this a primer for tomorrow at 4:30 when Cousin Dino comes on for Spreadheads, I'm sure. Quite sure, in fact, that we'll pick some of these ball games. You do have Thursday night action on the college gridiron, highlighted by two games. Don't know that either will be particularly close, but they're of note. The defending national champs, Clemson, at home, and a 37-point favorite to take on ACC foe, Georgia Tech. So the Ramblin' Wreck, bunch of engineers, are heading to Clemson, and they are 37-point dogs on the road. Then you've got what I believe is termed as the Holy War, if I'm not mistaken. Number 14, Utah at BYU, Thursday night action. There are some Friday night games, nothing I'm going to bother you with, though. On Saturday, here's what you need to know. Duke is playing, number 2, Bama. That game in Atlanta, 2:30 kickoff. The only matchup, I believe, of the weekend featuring two ranked teams. Number 11, Oregon. Number 16, Auburn. 6:30 kickoff from Jerry World. And number 10, Texas. You could get a glimpse of LSU's Week 2 opponent. They'll be taking on La Tech from Austin. That is Saturday night. Sunday, Houston is at number 4, Oklahoma. And Labor Day Monday, number 9, Notre Dame is at Louisville. Wouldn't it be sweet? I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if the Golden Domers could take one on the chin Week 1, Papa John's Stadium, with the whole country off of work and watching? I don't believe it's going to happen, but it would make my August, and it might even do a pretty darn good job of making my September. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. T, it's been a while, my friend. Good to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm doing great, Ben. Doing pretty good. I have LSU 11-1, but not losing to Alabama. I think they're going to slip somewhere else. And I have the Saints 10-6. And that's my thoughts, and love your show. Keep up the good work, my man.
There you go. So Clint had them at 12 wins, talking about the Saints. I was at 11, one rung below on the ladder. T says 10-6. I think it's going to be very difficult to replicate 13-3. And I think we all recognize that the Saints really wanted to, probably could have stamped home a 12-4 finish to last season. Taking on the Panthers the way they did, they basically went surrender Cobra style. Can you get the 13-14 wins again this year? I don't think so. I don't think the Rams will be as good as they were last year either in the regular season. But it's about getting where you need to be come January. And if you're lucky, come early February. So I'll say this too, Clint, because a lot of our listeners are saying, okay, you gave predictions on LSU, the Saints, the Cajuns. I was reminded in the last break, I got a text in. People got a lot of long memories here. It's kind of like the dude that literally logs all of Rome shows. What's his name?
The website is stucknut.com, and it is amazing. Like, the dude is a jungle historian.
So whoever is chronicling what we do, God bless your soul. I won't put his name on the radio.
This guy's probably lost money because of some of your predictions.
Yeah. He reminded that I didn't do book it predictions last year.
Yeah, we didn't. I don't know why we didn't do that last year.
It's probably because we have a really crappy producer. Oh, hi, Clint.
Throwing shade is in the next segment, yeah. Ben.
So
save that for the next segment.
We did book it predictions this year. Let me run those down again briefly in case you missed them, because I think this is something that we'll use, and I feel quite certain the first time one of these guys or teams has a bad game, Clint will bring out the sound, and that train just won't be late this year. On the college side, I gave 4. I got Travis Etienne, Clemson running back, Jennings native, winning the Heisman Trophy. And I already put my money where my mouth is. 20-1 he's going off at. I got that in Biloxi, friend of a friend, this weekend. I got 2 SEC teams making the college football playoffs. It'll be LSU and Bama. I got Oregon beating Auburn in the opener. The Pac-12 as a whole gaining more respect this year, but still no seat at the college football table. And finally, on the LSU front, give me Ja'Marr Chase to lead the Tigers, receiving yards and touchdowns, making it all the way to a second-team all-SEC pick in a really, really good receiver league this year. On the NFL side, book it. Pat Mahomes throws less than 40 touchdowns this year after hitting 50 last year. I think the Bears finishes the number 1 seed in the NFC, and rookie running back David Montgomery, your rookie of the year. I got Jacksonville winning the AFC South, making it to the AFC title game, and that means a bounce-back season from Leonard Fournette and all of Booga Nation. And finally, on the Saints front, the combination of Marcus Davenport and Trey Hendrickson combined for 13 sacks. So it may not be a monumental leap forward for Davenport in year 2, but he and Hendrickson will be more than just serviceable opposite of Cam Jordan. We're coming right back in. Time to throw some shade. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports Predictions Heavy Program today on 103.7 The Game.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
All I can see when I hear this song is the SNL skit with Chris Farley. Like, it's the only thing I'm seeing right now. And that isn't the mental image you want when you're trying to give high-quality sports talk. Clint, you know exactly what you did there. I don't want to see Farley and a bunch of dudes by a pool in my mind's eye anymore. And with that, we appropriately remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust in their professional installers. That means you can trust Alex and Todd inside your home and then to put up those gorgeous customizable screen rooms, the patio covers, the shades and awnings, and the list goes on. You can also trust the collective team at Patio Center to up your patio game in 2019. All it takes to start, a trip to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
This is rare. I've got a quartet today, but I'm going to hustle through all of them. First up, Antonio Brown. He can't stop landing here. Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger said in a recent interview with Michelle Tafoya, he wishes he wouldn't have called AB out after he threw an interception at the end of the Broncos game last year. Roethlisberger said it ruined a friendship. Antonio Brown on Twitter said, never friends, just had to get my ends. Shut up already. This is the same AB who took pictures with Big Ben at the Pro Bowl a couple years back and put stepbrothers on the top of it. Maybe AB needs to shut up a little bit. Let's go now to LSU. Dante Starks, freshman out of John Arant. I like this tweet, and this one came just a few hours ago. Hey, NCAA, I finished my math course. Can you upload it to my profile expeditiously, please? I have a game on Saturday. Thank you, from Dante Starks. Just pressure the man. I like that. There are rumors, going to number three, that now retired Colts quarterback Andrew Luck had his tires slashed Saturday night outside of Lucas Oil Stadium. I'm going to hope that's a rumor. If it's not, there's more than just shade that needs to be thrown. And CD, I could explain to them the fourth leg of our quartet here, but I'd rather them hear it. Know that you're listening to Rob Gronkowski explaining why he retired.
But I want to be clear to my fans. I needed to recover. I was not in a good place. Football was bringing me down, and I didn't like it. And I was losing that joy in life, like the joy. I'm sorry right now, but I really was, and I was fighting through it. And I knew what I signed up for, and I knew what I was fighting through. And I knew I just have to fix myself.
I know there's some cats that laughed at a moment there. That didn't sound funny to me. And again, anybody who was piling on Andrew Luck, watch Andrew Luck's speech. Listen to what Gronk just said and watch it because it's all over the internet. I'm throwing shade at the idea that we've seen the last of this. Quite the contrary. Andrew Luck just opened a door. And it took all of 40 hours for Gronk to sprint right through it. Not blaming Gronk one bit. Just saying, we're not done with this whole thing yet. Not by a long shot.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
There you go. Four on a Tuesday. Now we got to take a call. Let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Chad, thank you so much for waiting. What you got for us?
Not too much, Ben. Hey, Ben, man, I like your prediction on 11-1. I think it's a five-game season, two away games, Alabama and Texas. The rest are at home, and those are grudge matches to me. About getting in the playoffs, though, I don't really see how you're saying that. If Georgia is in there with Alabama, who you have winning the SEC championship?
I've got Alabama as a top two team in the country, and I've got Georgia as probably the number three or four team in the country playing that game. And so I think Bama beating Georgia allows somebody next in line at five or six to come up. I think a one-loss LSU team that only lost to Bama would get in ahead of maybe the Pac-12's best team, maybe the Big 12's best team.
I was saying maybe Georgia still sneaks in if it's a close game, or unless LSU plays Bama really close away. I just don't understand how you see two undefeated teams. Well, if Alabama and Georgia are going in undefeated to the championship game with a one-loss close game, I don't know how you keep Georgia out. Good. I hope LSU does get in, and some of these guys that are playing are going to be a top 10 matchups. But I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Chad, you got it. Here's another thing I would add there. I never said that Georgia would be undefeated getting to that game. In the SEC East, you don't have to be. Georgia could absolutely lose one to Florida, especially they could lose one to Auburn, right? The cross-division game, and still be fine in that SEC East. There also exists a possibility that Georgia loses at home early in the season. I believe it's the third or fourth week of the year that Georgia hosts Notre Dame. Georgia could lose that game, run the table in the SEC, and then if they lose to Bama, they'd be a two-loss team overall. So I think there are a number of scenarios. I know we're cooking these things up and doctoring it to fit our narrative here in late August, but that's what we do. At least if you're ready to have the wheelbarrow rolled out for yourself, then you'll do these things. And yes, Clint, we're putting it on the line. I know that a lot of modern sports talk radio, they're trying to shy away from this. They don't want anything on wax for somebody to come back to in a few weeks. I could care less, brother. I'm putting it out there. It's how I feel. I'm not going to take it back mid-season. This is how I feel about the Saints, LSU, UL, all the other book it predictions.
You're not afraid of those Twitter accounts that old takes exposed type stuff? You're not afraid
of
that?
You kidding me? Come on now. You got to give predictions, man. You got to have some fun with this. That's why every Friday, and it will resume this Friday.
I'm so excited about this.
We go over-unders on LSU. I'm happy to throw the Cajuns or the Saints in there. The only thing I don't want to do is give you a total of like 13 of them. Sometimes I feel like I'm asking you to do trigonometry when I give you three of them, right?
Especially when people are driving.
Well, you know. People's health, making good predictions, the Lady of Liberty scale. Weigh it out for yourself. Figure it out. You're an adult, unless you're listening and you're not, in which case, ask an adult and then have them call in with the sink or swim answers. We'll be right back in. One more segment in this hour. I want to get back to the Saints, and then we're getting you ready for Astros, Rays, 6:35. Pregame show from Minute Maid Park, 7:10, your first pitch. How about Morton versus Verlander? Yes, please. You'll get all that and more here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station. And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
I think the biggest thing for this team would be starting fast. I can't remember the first season opener we won, so I think that would be a big emphasis for us. I'm pretty sure every team's saying the same thing, but starting fast, getting out to a 1-0 start, that would be huge for us.
How do you find a way to beat the Texans in a couple of Monday nights? That's exactly what Teron Armstead is referring to. Between now and then, Saints will have a date with the Dolphins this Thursday night, so they'll be in New Orleans for quite some time. We're right back into the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And we've got an open phone line for you. Call us up as we talk some Saints here. 706-0111. The biggest highlight other than the Saints' first team offense coming out, giving them hell for about eight plays on an opening drive, Breeze to Michael Thomas for a touchdown. That aside, Deontay Harris with a punt return touchdown. I think, caught a lot of people's eyes. We're going to let you hear from a couple of different members of the Saints organization on what that means and what it could mean for Deontay Harris. Might he now be competing with the oft-injured Marcus Sherrill, who came over from the Vikings this offseason? Is it going to be Sherrill's returning kicks, or could it be Deontay Harris? Sean Payton weighs in first.
We had already signed one returner. We knew Tommy had left. I'd say in each draft, you know, you identify as they're draftable. There were a handful of draftable players that were returners. You know, we ranked that position, who's the best returner in the country, who were draftable returners. And then, you know, he was a player that that we had high grades on and ended up recruiting.
Let's stay on the theme of Deontay Harris, and we'll get the take now from Teron Armstead on whether or not he can make the team and make an impact.
He's electric. It looks natural to him. I don't want to say easy because, you know, nothing about this game is easy, but you can just tell from his first one in the dome, that was like his second day in pads, and it just was natural to him. His feel for how to set up blocks, how to read it. He's stronger than people give him credit for, too. He's not just going through untouched. He's breaking some arm tackles and keeping his he got natural leverage. He's 5'6", but he's breaking some arm tackles and keeping his feet moving. I'm excited. I'm excited for him.
How good can McCoy be?
That's the – like Ed Daniels popping in there on that question. And we'll get his take. Teron Armstead's on Eric McCoy here shortly. But that is the best – and most PC way I've ever heard somebody refer to a short person. He's got natural leverage. I like that. I will use that. Thank you, Teron Armstead. And I've bagged on Teron for him ending up on the injured list time and again. Boy, when he was healthy last year, he was a big part of the reason, along with fellow bookend Ryan Ramczyk, that the Saints had the best offensive line in football. Proven to be an awfully good quote over the years as well. Now, here's Teron Armstead answering our friend Ed Daniels' question. Tell us about that rookie at center from A&M. Tell us about Eric McCoy.
McCoy got a chance to be very special, and his approach and his mindset is correct. It's in the right place. He's a tough individual. He's one of the hardest workers I've seen from such young guys. Extremely smart. You know, our offense is pretty complex. A lot of communication between him and Drew. And he's grasping it at a very, very high rate. So I'm fully behind him, and anything I can do to help him, I'll definitely be there.
We'll take one more from Armstead and then move it along on 103.7 The Game. The Saints starting left tackle waxed on starting running back Alvin Kamara. He has embraced, according to Armstead, every challenge, including, I would imagine, being, you know, a top two player and running back coming off of fantasy boards.
He's just more vocal. You can see him pulling the young guys and, you know, things that you won't normally see from a third-year guy. Usually you got somebody that's been in the league for a while longer, but he had Mark for a couple years, and Mark was that guy. He was that voice. And Alvin's not a real talkative guy, I mean, anyway. But he understands the void with Mark being gone and him being the 10-year back now at such a early stage in his career, and he's embraced it. He's embraced everything since he came in. Every challenge, AK's embraced.
I can see AK-41 being the type of dude in the locker room, on the sideline, especially in the huddle, that says very, very little. Exactly what Armstead mentioned there. But when he speaks, you listen. I could see that being the case, absolutely. Let's move it along from Teron Armstead to Taysom Hill. And here, Hill likes the fact that, well, Sean Payton believes in him, and above and beyond anything else, no matter where he lines up, no matter what he's asked to do, that confidence takes Taysom Hill a long way.
I think the ultimate sign of confidence is that he continues to create opportunities for you. So coach doesn't need to say anything to me, but as he creates opportunities for me to play and do different things, like, I know that he believes in me, and if he didn't, he wouldn't do that for me. And so that there doesn't need to be anything that's said to me, but as he does that, that's the telltale sign to me.
I hate to go straight up kind of old man preaching here, but any youth athlete out there listening, just plug that in and replay it, right? You don't need to be told what you're doing well. You'll just be on the field playing. and they'll call plays for you, and they'll ask you to do important things. That's how you'll know that you're doing the right things. Of course, if you're on the other side of that and you're not asked to do very much, that'll be a different sign to you that you need to start working. I love that. From Taysom Hill, let's get one more from the Saints wild card on offense. He was asked so far how this preseason's worked out for him.
I've been really happy with the way that, the preseason games have gone. I feel like we've moved the ball really well. And, you know, preseason games can kind of be a cluster at times, but I felt like we've managed it really well. And I think we've obviously had penalties that have been drive killers. But other than that, like, we've moved the ball, and we've scored points, and we've gotten in positions to score. And so I've been really happy with the way that the preseason has gone. And again, I don't feel like I've needed that to feel how good I can be.
You know, to me, the only potential shame, depending on how you look at it, of this final preseason game, you know you're not seeing any of Breeze. You know that. I think Peyton was upset he had to put him in, whatever that was, six or eight plays the other night. I don't know how much of Bridgewater you'll see. I think this almost has to be at least one half worth of Taysom Hill at quarterback. You might view that as a good thing to prepare him for the future. I will view that as something that might add some wear and tear to a guy that they're going to want to run the football, to throw the football, to block, occasionally to catch. I mean, he just does so much. So I wonder exactly how this final preseason game Thursday night against the Dolphins, wonder how it plays out at quarterback, but I'm betting it ends with a good bit of Taysom Hill in the shotgun. All right, quickly, let's get one more. We'll go back to Sean Payton. And this is almost just sad. This is something that all Saints fans wish had been in place for the NFC title game, the new pass interference challenge rule. Sean Payton, come on down. Tell us what you think about it.
They're going to be very conservative in overturning calls. That being said, if it's consistent, then you know that as a coach relative to using a challenge on something that's close or not. Again, the challenge amount hasn't changed. You still only have two. So I think the thing for us that's a little different is periodically there'll be a catch or periodically there'll be an incompletion, and you got to train your mind to possibly think in terms of, was that an interference, either offensively and defensively, and then weigh, you know, where you're at in the game and the yards to be gained with the challenge.
Got to shoot you straight. Didn't hear a single word he said for the last 25 seconds or so. After he hit us with a straight Billy Napier, that's like twice this week, and it's only Tuesday, that we've gotten relative to.
Yeah.
I've started to incorporate it in my everyday speech outside of this program, too, so I just want you to understand that relative to good English, I now have a new catchphrase.
Yes.
Billy Napier is just he's seeping into brains throughout Acadiana, and clearly, as Sean Payton just proved, beyond.
It makes you wonder who was the first one to say use relative to. You got to imagine that might have been
Albert Einstein
or Saban.
Relative to the theory of relativity. You think it's a game? You think it's a bleeping game? Go DMX on you there. Relative to the theory of relativity. And that's how we're going to end hour number two. We're coming right back in. More football talk. Then we lead you to the juice box for high quality baseball. A couple of double digit win starters. Morton versus Verlander, raising the Astros, some playoff teams in the AL. This will be fun, so don't go anywhere. More Bumper to Bumper Sports leading you into Astros baseball on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Back in and rolling the dice some more. A predictions-laden edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Back in with you on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. For the next 30 minutes and change, inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Large show so far today, and it's been just about exclusively football because after all, it's, well, football season. But we will squeeze in some time for baseball. I want to give you the latest from the MLB standings, where the Astros fit in, and start to preview tonight's matchup. Rays at the Stros, Charlie Morton, former Houston Astro just last year, against Justin Verlander, AL Cy Young frontrunner. I'll get into that more in our next segment. But CD, we'd be remiss if we didn't look back. Not only have we been football heavy, I mentioned it's a predictions-laden edition of the program. You and I went in on darn near a game-by-game basis and gave our predictions, regular season records. First we went Saints, then we went LSU, and then we went UL. So let's run it down again and allow it to be interactive. You're just now joining the show. You've been with us for a while. We welcome you to call in with your predictions too. 706-0111. As for the Saints, I went with 11-5. Clint went with 12-4. I think at 11-5, the Saints are hosting a wild card round game. Clint believes at 12-4, they snag one of the two bye weeks in the NFC. Give the listeners a general feel, CD. How did you arrive at 12-4? Your overall take on this year's schedule and how the Saints navigate
it? A lot of it has to do with the fact that we just look at the divisions, especially the AFC South now with Andrew Luck leaving, and based off what I saw last weekend with the Texans and Cowboys, where the Texans absolutely got smoked, I think you wind up starting off 1-0, and then things kind of, it depends on what happens, but I still think that you wind up splitting a series with one of the two NFC South teams, probably wind up being Atlanta, as long as they stay healthy, because they can wind up being a nuisance on the defensive side of the football if they're 100% healthy. Outside of that, I feel like, you know, you can look at the Rams, that's probably going to wind up being a loss. Chicago, especially on the road, if I'm not mistaken, that could wind up being a loss as well, even though it is in like mid to late October. It's not like it's in December or January. I think 2006 Saints fans know all too well what that was like. But I think you wind up seeing 12-4, and a lot of these losses are losses you'd expect. Rams probably be a hard-fought one, and then Chicago, and you split with probably the Falcons and maybe even the Panthers.
I think the Saints' schedule this year, as you and I both alluded to in the opening segment, I think that the Saints are a little front-loaded, wouldn't you say, with difficult yep. landmines, right? Houston, I don't see them losing the opener.
Oh, no.
Not in the dome on Monday Night Football. But then after that, two straight on the West Coast, both teams that were awfully good last year in the NFC. You got Dallas in the opening month, who beat the Saints last year in a primetime game. At Jacksonville, at Chicago, back-to-back in October, I think the Jags, again, I laid that out as part of my book at predictions. I think the Jags win the AFC South and go to the AFC title game this year. I think the Bears end up as the number one seed in the NFC entering the playoffs. So, yeah, I think those are pretty good teams they're playing. And yet still, for my money, I've got the Saints at 5-3 heading into their bye week, which is perfectly positioned this year. Smack dab in the middle of the season, I think that they end the regular season on a 6-2 tear, losing only at the Falcons on Thanksgiving night and then at the Tennessee Titans on December the 22nd. So you and I both have the Saints repeating as a playoff team, again as a double-digit win team, but we both think that they take a step or two down the ladder from what was a 13-3 season a year ago. Let's move it now to LSU. I'll let you lead with what you predicted, how you got there, amigo.
I go with 10-2, and it's a lot has to do with the fact there's so many landmines. I don't have like an outright loss picked out, but there's several swing games. We can bring up Texas.
Bama's not an outright loss?
No, Bama is, but I'm okay. Saying like out that other one, I'm saying the second loss.
10-4.
Yeah, the second loss on that list, it could be to a litany of different teams, including the Texas game, Texas A&M at the end of the year, the Florida game, Mississippi State, just based off of trends. I think that there's a lot of different landmines that LSU's going to have to overcome. But at least one of those is going to trip them up, and they wind up being 10-2, which is nothing to like boudet about. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a really good year for LSU and another New Year's Six Bowl.
Boudet or Boudin?
No, boudet. That's okay. Boudet is a whole different thing. Boudet okay. is basically you pat your lips and you start crying like a baby.
That's remarkable. I've lived here now for almost 5 years and didn't quite have that one in the repertoire, but I'll tuck it away, and that'll be an arrow I fire from my quiver one day soon, I promise. I got LSU at 11-1. And again, like the Saints, I love a balanced schedule for rest purposes. There are two bye weeks this year. LSU plays four, they're off. They play four, they're off. Then they play four. I like that part. I like the fact that Florida, Auburn, A&M, all at home. Chad called in the 5 o'clock hour, and he said three grudge match games at home. He's right. The two real toughies on the road at Texas week two, I'll take them that early. I like that. And then, obviously, at Alabama, coming off the second bye week. I think LSU loses only at Bama and finds a way to make it into the college football playoffs still without going to the SEC title game. Give me Bama over Georgia in Atlanta, and LSU is a 5 or 6 seed with its lone loss to Bama. Ends up getting in after Georgia falls out. Now, here's the other thing. As I mentioned in the 4 o'clock hour, CD, LSU has 5 ranked teams on the schedule this year out of 12. I remember years when I was at Tiger Egg Magazine at scout.com, and we were predicting what was going to happen. We looked at the difficulty of the schedule. There were years when LSU was playing like 9 ranked teams. Again, time will tell if maybe Mississippi State turns into a ranked team. They're not now. But there are 5 ranked teams. One of them's Texas. What does that mean? It means 4 out of the 8 conference games right now are against ranked teams. That doesn't sound like the SEC West that I know. And it doesn't remind me of a crossover opponent that is formidable because LSU is at Vandy this year. That's a good thing. So I think the stars align a little bit. Not only does LSU have a returning quarterback, not only is this potentially one of the best defenses of the decade, one of, I didn't say the, but then also it has to fit a little bit from a scheduling standpoint this year. I think that it does. So far, Clint and I predicted LSU and the Saints, and we have double-digit wins for both. I don't know that that theme continues as we'll finish up with the Cajuns, but again, it's a little more difficult there. When you start off with Mississippi State and you're a Group of 5 team, that's going to make it an uphill climb to get to 10. But you had them at 9-3, CD. That would be 2 more wins in the regular season than a year ago. It would be a regular season record for the program. I don't know if 9 is possible. That seems a little bit of a stretch to me. But tell our listeners how you think they get there.
I think they get there largely because of the fact, like you brought it up, 8-4 and that loss to Ohio. I feel like they can wind up coming away with the win there because of the fact I feel like Ohio, it's not as dominant of a program as maybe they were the last couple of years. Apparently they've lost a lot of players. I think they could wind up hurting Ohio a lot more and helping the Cajuns get things done. And I'd say potentially you beat Arkansas State on the road and really buck that trend. That's the biggest thing for me is you change the narrative of this series between the Cajuns and Arkansas State being back and forth where every year whoever's the host team winds up winning the whole thing. I think this could wind up being a great year for the Cajuns. They go back to the Sun Belt title game as the West Division champs, but they're going back to the Rock where it's been proven it's a difficult place to play for any Sun Belt team.
We are on the same page about how the season ends. We both agree the Cajuns win the Sun Belt West and play again for the second time in only 2 conference title games ever. They play on the road at App State. The difference in some of our picks, yes, I have them losing at Ohio. You have the Cajuns winning that game. But I've got the landmark win of the season in the early Billy Napier era is Wednesday, October the 9th against the Mountaineers. And so I think, like last year, it's a slow start to the season. I got the Cajuns off the mat through September at 2-3. Losses versus Mississippi State, and then back-to-back at Ohio, at Georgia Southern. Then I think they come home and sandwiched in between 2 bye weeks. I think they beat App State at home and then win at Arkansas State. And so I have them finishing the season, CD, 6 out of their last 7. I've got them winning, and that means a win over Troy at home. That means a win against the in-state rival ULM Warhawks at home. So the other thing that I'll note I have on my schedule, I've got the Cajuns going undefeated this year at Cajun Field. If you want people to come to your games, you better do a few things. You better win. You better have a great home field experience. And what's the best way to combine those 2 things, Clint? Win at home.
Exactly.
That loss last year to Coastal at home was just the absolute turn in the punch bowl.
It was. I mean,
you can't say it any other way. The year prior to that, which was HUD's final, I believe they had App State at home on either a Tuesday or a Thursday night.
Yeah, it was one of those primetime games, and they absolutely got their behind.
What, 24-0?
Yeah, it was 24-0 at half, and that remained the
score. It was just a thumping. you have to protect the home field. I think the Cajuns do that this year, and that becomes one of the major storylines of their season. I think they win one more in the regular season than a year ago. You believe two more.
I think this way just looks right now to me, and again, it's a lot because of the fact of what I've heard. It's all about that eye test, and I feel like 9-3 is more than feasible. The big question is, do they finally get over the hump against App State? That's going to be the biggest question. I know you say it at the beginning of the year. I just want to know if they can do it.
And to your point, I'm going to butt in and say this. We had to hit a break here momentarily. If I'm wrong about the Ohio game, and I'm wrong about the App State game, if those two games are flip-flop, if the Cajuns lose against App State and beat Ohio, and they still finish with my mark of 8-4, it will still have been a successful season. But they do need that landmark win. The first opportunity is this Saturday in New Orleans. I'm excited to be there. They beat Mississippi State. Oh, that's more than a landmark win. That is, I mean, maybe second in line behind beating Texas A&M with Jake the Snake. All-time type of wins. But if they find a way to beat App State, that would do just fine, I think, for everybody. All right, the football, it's been flowing. We're going to move it over to baseball when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back at you on 103.7 The Game.
It's Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Right back in from break. Got some more Bumper to Bumper Sports coming right at you on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. Always happy to take you home on Acadiana Sports Station. And we'll be back out on the road tomorrow, Thursday, times two, actually, on Thursday, and then Friday. Let me tell you all about it, and then I want to take a stroll around the diamond. Don't forget, tomorrow, it'll be our third of four installments, B2BS live at Twin Peaks on Johnston, and then we chase it with a live fantasy draft. And tomorrow night is our live fantasy draft for Bumper to Bumper Sports. I'm yoked about it. We've got numerous returning members from last year's uber competitive league. We've got some new blood, and then we've got some returning teams. If you've been here for almost 5 years like I have, that's the kind of thing that can happen. So we're psyched about it. Make sure you listen in. Even better, come visit us tomorrow, Twin Peaks on Johnston. Thursday, back out to the Taproom River Ranch. Gordy Rush will be aboard. We'll have Blaine Viator remoting in, and then I'll go to see him. Yes, that's right. From 4 to 6:45, it'll be B2BS from the Tap Room Thursday. And then starting at 6:45, the pregame show for Karen Crow and Bro Bridge, Jamboree style from Cajun Field. Told you twice over, we're out on the road on Thursday, and we wrap up this game week on a Friday by taking a trip out to Rufino's on the River. Justin Vincent making his Friday debut at 5 p.m. Telling you, we are in for an awfully big week. And I think we're in for an awfully big finish to the Major League Baseball season. In the regular season, maybe yes, maybe no. In the postseason, you bet your backside. Let's take the Stros, for example. 85-47. All right, so they're 132 games in. Exactly 30 to go. And the Stros kind of hope this regular season ends. Why? Well, they've just now, over the past week, extended their lead in the AL West to 9. That bad boy got as low as, I believe, 5.5 or 6, but a 4-game win streak, 7 out of the last 10 in the win column for the Stros. Yeah, it's nice to have the Angels come to town. And suddenly, they're just looking to get to the playoffs and have home field advantage. A look around the rest of the AL shows us, well, a really, really good Yankees team. But here's the thing of it, they're literally a half game ahead of your Houston Astros. 86-47. The Yanks, well, they've won 5 out of their last 10, so not quite as hot, I think we can all safely say, as the Stros. And also, they've got somebody nipping at their heels in the division. The Tampa Bay Rays at 76-56. Rays, of course, in town to take on the Astros tonight. Morton versus Verlander, baby. And more on that before our show's over today. But the Yanks kind of doing right now to the Rays what the Astros are doing to the Oakland A's. You got the A's 9 games back in the AL West, the Rays 9.5 games behind the Yankees. Last year's World Series champ, the Boston Red Sox, well, they're kind of hanging on by a thread, 6 games back in the wild card race. So if the season ended today, it would be the Yankees, the Twins, and the Astros as your division winners. And then you would have the Indians, a half game up on the Oakland A's. Oakland and Tampa technically tied. So I think there would be like a 162nd game before a 163rd game, something like that. It would get nutty. But earlier I mentioned the Astros are in darn good form. The Yankees, not quite as much. Arguably, one of the hottest teams in baseball, at least for a stretch they were, was the Cleveland Indians. And they negated a huge lead from the Twins before some recent backsliding. That's what happens when you take on those New York Mets. But you've got the Twins 3.5 games up on the Indians. So all told, right now you've got the Yankees and Rays in the AL East that look like playoff contenders, or at least to get there. The Twins and the Indians in the Central, the Astros and the A's in the AL West. One of those six isn't going to make the cut. Now you look at everything all told. You rope in the National League, there are 3 80-win teams. No, 4. 4 80-win teams in the bigs. I mentioned the Astros, the Yankees on one side of the ledger. The LA Dodgers at 86-47 also have hit that mark. The other, probably none of us would have guessed. And I saw this team 4 weeks ago. The Atlanta Braves are 80-53, also belong amongst the hottest teams in baseball. Before a loss last night, 3-1 in Colorado, Braves had won 8 of 9. So right now this team, if the starting pitching holds up, Dallas Keuchel certainly helping in the A. They've got some other new faces there in the bullpen that you would think help a lot. The Braves look pretty darn formidable. They're 5.5 games up on the Nationals. I think that lead is there to stay. The Dodgers, 19.5 games up in the NL West. That's your biggest lead in baseball, and you're only getting one team from the NL West into the playoffs. So I can almost assure you it'll be the Dodgers, the Braves, the Nationals, and then 2 out of the 3 from the Cardinals, the Cubs, and the Brewers. And it brings me unlimited joy. Somebody bring Hunt Palmer here so I can rub his nose in it like a dog that went number 1 or number 2 inside. But my Cardinals, 3 games up on the Cubbies, and the Cards are 5.5 games up on the Milwaukee Brewers. So you look at the NL wild card race, and if it were to end today, the Nationals, 4 games up on the Cubs. The Cubs, 1 game up on the Phillies. So I guess I can't completely bury the Phillies, and nor the Mets at 67-63. So look, there's still some time. There are still a lot of things to be decided, but I think we know who the main contenders are, and I think we've got a pretty good idea. 6 teams for 5 spots in the AL is what we seem to be looking at. On the other side, maybe more like 7, possibly 8 teams trying to slide into 5 spots on the National League side. So it's football season of that. There could be no doubt. If you thought I'd miss an opportunity to slide in some of the best baseball talk that you'll get in Acadiana, you got another thing coming. Soon I'll be having to hit some AL, NL, MVP conversations. Can my boy from Atlanta, Ronald Acuna Jr., sneak up on Cody Bellinger or Christian Yelich? The answer is probably not, but he might just make it interesting. If you're 21 years old and you're going 40-40, you are a dog. And Acuna is exactly that. On the American League side of things, we know who some of the heavy hitters are, but let's just focus on who ought to be your Cy Young. And that almost certainly is going to be Justin Verlander. I made reference to JV earlier. Why? He's on the bump tonight. In less than 10 minutes, you're going to have the pregame show, Astro Launch, and then at 7:10, first pitch between Justin Verlander and the Astros against Charlie Morton and the Tampa Bay Rays. So two of the true contenders in the American League squaring off in H-Town tonight, and two of the best pitchers, certainly in all of baseball, are going to toe the rubber. It should be a lot of fun. Clint and I, hey, we're just having a lot of fun ourselves leading you there. So let's hit our final break, and then it's a world's shortest segment audition. Great guest today. You know, we appreciate every single one of them, especially the great Shay Dixon. Go247.com. Gave my book it picks. Clinton and I went deep on the Saints, LSU, and UL, but we tie a bow on the show next. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're glad to have you for another moment or two on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com.